from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia. This is Cleats and Cufflinks.
Hello and welcome to Cleats and Cufflinks. I'm Nick Darling, and I am here today to try to discover if there is, in fact, an upper limit to the number of roads you can have on a podcast. I have, of course, Dusty, as always, and Jamie Rhodes joining us today, all the way from
Rhode Island.
Rhode Island, that's coming right down from the fine state of Rhode Island to join us on the podcast today. How are we all doing?
Well, if you wanted a max number of roads, we could get our father in here.
Well, we could get your wife in here, too.
So we're adding roads as
she's
year
a professional,
over year.
Though.
I know.
At this.
She's too good at podcasting for
she's
us.
She's too good at podcasting. She'd make us all look terrible.
She let me on a podcast with her, with Jamie, also, maybe 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. So you guys have done,
we've done
three
one.
Roads.
Three roads and a Wickner.
Three roads and a Wickner.
Right. Amy was also on that podcast, yeah.
There's a, there's a Wickner at the intersection of every three roads.
They call it the general store. Is that what that's meant?
I don't know. You go there at midnight, you trade your soul, you learn to play the blues.
No, that's Wiccan.
Oh, that's Wiccan.
Oh,
that's
so
I can't keep track.
Confusing.
Yeah, it's very confusing. But anyway, so we got a full packed kind of podcasty thing today. We're going to talk to Jamie a little bit about the refereeing.
Yes.
Because this is what you do.
This is one of the things I do.
In this context.
For the MLU,
room.
That is
in
what
this,
I do.
In the small world that we're living in currently,
okay.
You referee. And pontificate, but more privately than your brother.
Well,
hey now,
no one's given me a podcast on which to pontificate regularly.
You don't have a platform yet. This is what it is.
Time will tell.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. Then we also will talk about a little bit about beer cocktails. Mm. That's going to come up. Some broadcast news, and of course, the elephant in the room.
There's a big game.
The big game. We'll talk about the big game. Right now, though, first we're going to start with the fact that our glasses in front of us are empty. So we
not
should take
even
care of that.
Full.
We want to thank, of course, our championship game sponsor, Weyerbacher Brewing Company. They are the official beer of the 2016 MLU Championship game. And today we're going to be drinking Althea, which is a Belgian-style double ale brewed with plums. And, of course, I'm going to pass that to Dusty for the bottle copy read.
I do like plums.
This is a bit of a serious bottle copy read. So.
Hey now. Althea is an ancient Greek name meaning healing. Weyerbacher donates a portion of the proceeds of each bottle of Althea to a fund that helps those in need to defray costs associated with breast cancer treatment. For more information on Althea and the cause, please visit our website, www.weyerbacher.com. Boom.
It's for a cause. Yes. I like a beer for a cause. I like an altruistic beer.
I also like unaltruistic beers.
True.
I don't try to limit.
True. Yeah, I'm not having myself in. But so we're going to open this up here.
Having yourself in.
Whoa, that was satisfying.
Yes, that was...
All right, so
I feel better already.
Yeah,
caged in court. Is hemming yourself in a reference to a bad tailor? What is the?
I think that's exactly what that is. When you use the term hemming yourself in, you're actually referring to sewing yourself into a garment, which is the most embarrassing thing that a tailor can do.
Hey, wait, I'm stuck.
That's not even easy to do.
Can you imagine having to rescue somebody from a three-piece suit? That's hemming yourself in.
Isn't just a good pair of scissors away?
A good pair of scissors would get you out, but if you've hemmed yourself in completely enough,
I'm assuming that's
not
going to
work that well.
It works. It's worse with double stitching than it is with single stitching.
Far, far worse.
Sorry, that's a Hudsucker Proxy reference.
Fantastic film.
Going over even my own head.
For kids.
It's a Frisbee reference.
It's a Frisbee reference.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right at the end.
So, Weyerbacher, cheers, by the way.
Cheers to Weyerbacher.
Cheers.
The Althea here.
1, 2, 3. There we go.
Definitely getting some of the dark fruits in there, some of the stone fruits.
Mm. And a sweetie flavor, a little sweet flavor in there.
A little sweet flavor in there.
I like that.
This is a delicious
it's
beer.
Clearly a double.
So those of you coming to the championship game, we're going to be serving this beer up in the VIP room.
Mm.
So VIP deal, actually pretty good this year. And this isn't just a sales plug, but it's going to be real hot. And the VIP...
I'm a little concerned
the
about
VIP
that.
Area.
The VIP area is going to be hot?
No, that has
no,
air
no,
conditioning.
No,
that's going to be cool.
That's sizzling.
But we are going to be serving Althea up there, a bunch of other beers from Weyerbacher.
couple of cool things. I was there when they picked up some of them.
Yeah, yeah. We got the that last chance with apricot, which is pretty much gone in the world. But that's going to be available.
Last chance.
It's your literally last chance IPA with apricot.
Well, if they didn't put me on the sizzling field, I would definitely be in the VIP booth.
Yeah, you're not going to be allowed to have any of that. You got to be sharp.
Well, after the game.
After the game.
Sprint up into the VIP room.
Gotta go.
change your shirt, rip off the ref clothing, reveal your normal clothes underneath.
I'll be wearing a polo and some tan shorts.
He's already planned that. Apparently this
Wait
is
a second. I travel light.
Yeah. But we're going to have, we're going to have beer up there, we're going to have food up there, air conditioning up there. You get a disc with the ticket.
Can you see the field?
You can see the field. It's only open till halftime. Okay. So you're going to have to go out in the heat like everybody else at halftime. But you can see the field from there if you want to watch. It's not a great angle. It's not like a luxury box like we had at PPL, but it is a really nice room. And it's $75 and you get all that stuff included. So
it's worth
not
it.
Bad. We only have a few left, but if anyone out there wants them, get on that.
Nail down exactly how many a few are, so like 3?
No, I think it's like 10. I think we have like 10 left. But it's kind of a small room. So
you get one more group in there and just take the whole thing over.
They
you
could
buy
just,
all
they could
10
own
of
it.
Them.
They could own it.
You're going to be in
the
charge.
Whole thing.
Yeah, you will own it and you just don't be able to do. And then, of course, everybody will get to have Weyerbacher beer at the after party over at City Tap House. One cool thing about that, I made a cocktail for this, which I sent over to City Tap House.
You made the cocktail?
Have you actually made it yet?
I did.
Okay.
I thought you relied on some sort of real professional to make the cocktail.
No. I mean, I have some background in this area.
Yeah, you're a previous professional.
I'm a little out of practice, right. So it took a lot of tries, during which I drank more wheat beer than I'm typically known to drink. So it's a wheat beer cocktail. It's using Weyerbacher's wheat beer, their Hefeweizen, and it's going to be gin, lemon juice, Saint Germain, which is an elderflower liqueur, and a little bit of orange bitters.
So when you messed up the first time, what did you do too much of?
Too much Saint Germain, way too sweet.
Okay.
Way too sweet. Second time, not enough Saint Germain, a little too sour. Third time, baby bear, just right.
Nice.
Right in the middle. It's perfect. Nice. The cool thing about it is I asked on Twitter and on Facebook for naming ideas for this. I got a lot, as you might suspect, but I'm going to read a few of my favorites. Trey's untucked shirt. It's a reference to Trey Katzenbach.
Has to wear untucked shirt.
We force him to wear untucked shirts in the MLU.
I'm concerned that means that the drink doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, it's no longer there.
It's already out.
It's already gone. That's what we'll call it when it's out. The dangerous play. Goes right along with hospital pass. Yeah, dangerous play seems a little bit in bad taste.
Topical.
Yeah,
topical.
And also topical. We'll get to that. This one's a little on the nose from Patrick Deviney. Nick Darling's anxiety potion.
So it was easier to make the last one than it was to make the first one.
Yeah, exactly.
Anxiety's dropping.
It's tailing off. I liked these ones. I really like. I like the up call. I thought that was pretty good.
That's not bad. Was that from Upcall Ultimate?
I don't remember who sent that one. I didn't make a note of that. I also like the lazy heckle. That's from Flav.
But I think she's kind of insulting your mixology skills there.
Oh, yeah. No. It's clearly would be a self-deprecating name for the drink. And not without merit. Lefty Handler.
I don't really get that one.
I don't know either. Who was that?
I think that was Glenn.
Glenpool. Glenn Poole in with Lefty
Maybe
Handler.
That's why I don't really get it.
Oh. Yeah.
He's too complicated for you.
Nobody understands him but his woman.
Nobody understands him. And then Dusty, unfortunately, you have my favorite so far, which I didn't.
That's unfortunate.
Just kind of ruins.
It's an insider game. You know, he's not allowed to participate in these contests.
But I like that. Huck and Hope. Huck and Hope. Because this drink includes many ingredients of which you are not fond.
There are 5 ingredients, correct?
There are 5 ingredients.
3 of them I would never willingly drink.
Which means if you bring them all together, it must be better than the individual parts.
If you
parts.
Gave me orange bitters and elderflower liqueur, I'd be all right.
You could probably do something with that.
The other three,
the
I
other
don't
three,
know
not
what
your
the
thing.
Point is.
Not your thing. That's fair. Well, Huck and Hope is what we have now. If anyone has any other ideas, send them to me at Nick Darling. We'll try to incorporate them. I'm saving it for the last minute. It's gonna be a last minute decision.
If you're sending them to me, I will pass them on to Nick as my own. Second and third entries into the contest.
Just rigging the system.
Well, I've been trying to get into this throw a disc golf thing into the basket. Yeah, can't get into
the
that.
The $10,000 toss.
Well,
it's no good.
It's coming. It's coming.
I
not
like
for
watching
you.
It every
not
year.
For
coming
you.
For you.
You don't get to do it.
I think you should sit next to it.
Can I practice beforehand?
Yeah, set the standard for everyone else who walks up.
Well, we have to make sure it works. Right. So yeah, we'll definitely.
Well, you have to make sure the money actually comes when you.
Yeah, we'll hit the chains and we'll assume a giant check will materialize. Well, but yeah, we are.
It's a circus check.
I'll only use an Innova discs.
Well, that's the rule.
those are my disc golf discs.
The same here. Yeah, I have a couple others, but I don't like them as much. I use a lot of Innova discs.
Yeah, I got one Judge, but that's a different thing.
That's a different thing entirely. But yeah, we are doing that. So people coming out to the game, you sign up. You get a little ticket, and then we do a drawing. If we draw your name, come down at halftime, 50-yard throw with a disc golf disc provided by Innova, which you get to keep.
You get to walk away with something.
So you're at least walking away with the disc. 50-yard throw is not easy.
You can use a Pulsar in disc golf competition. Would you allow someone to use that also? I think it's way harder to get
a basket. For people who don't know how this is done, it's an insurance thing.
Right? You'd have to check with the insurance
company. So I'd have to check with the insurance company.
You didn't put the money up yourself.
If that was allowed. I'm not putting $10,000 up. I'm putting some money up. It's not cheap.
Right.
But it's not $10,000. But anyway, if somebody makes it, we give them $10,000. You have to pay the taxes.
I'm rooting for success.
Oh, so am I. Every time.
Every time.
Every time.
It's like those half-court shots in basketball.
Exactly what I was thinking. I want them to win.
And I can tell you, from the perspective of the people putting up that money, I've paid the money. Right, I don't get that.
You don't
back.
Get that back.
No, so
I want the insurance company to pay out every time.
Absolutely. You didn't hear that, insurance company. But we'll document it. It'll be a cool thing.
Regular listeners,
watch that. But let's get into some meat.
We have meat too.
Yeah, I wish we had meat. You know, I was listening to Men in Blazers the other day. They had a meat sponsor.
I know.
Cured Meats.
Yes.
Seriously, any cured meat providers out there who want to get on board with this? Cleats and cufflinks.
On the MLU
sausages
train.
Would help.
Sausages would really, really be a great touch.
Yeah.
Really fill out the agenda.
Since we're probably not going to get pies.
Since it's taken us like 15 minutes to actually get to any content here already.
So, which sort of meat would you like to start with?
I'm thinking we talk a little bit to Jamie while we have him, since we've basically talked around him quite a bit so far.
Literally around him.
Yeah.
My neck is getting a little bit of a workout on this one. Hey guys, how's it going? Luckily, Nick talks more, so.
He says more dense and meaningful things, and I just say a lot of things.
So this is my looking side. This is my pondering side.
That's exactly right. You want to tilt the head with the...
Oh, yeah. I get the hand on this.
Yeah. mine's just Phil.
Well, we all need some Phil.
I'm the nougat. He's the peanuts, I guess.
I'm all killer.
So why don't you give us, give the folks out there a little bit of your background with the MLU? I think that might be a good place to start.
Well, let's just say, okay, so first year professional ultimate started, and I'll say the words with the AUDL.
Back in the AUDL days for us, because I was involved with the spinners then a little bit.
And there was one of the teams that they had was the Rhode Island Rampage, which, by the way, if anybody out there has a Rhode Island Rampage shirts, as far as I can tell in the pro leagues, winner. That is the best jersey. Because
it is
orange with a huge rhinoceros on it.
Oh, I remember that jersey.
I want to say Terry Roth has one.
It's possible.
I'm pretty sure Chip Kopp still has one. We still use his Rhode Island Rampage discs.
That's quality.
At John Doe practices.
Fantastic.
Well, they were looking for refs. And I go, I'm not really playing anymore at that time. That was early in my retirement. I'm post-retirement now. I'm back to playing. But it was early in my retirement, and I said, I like reffing sports. I've been a soccer referee. I'm a volleyball umpire. I was like, let's go see what this is. I've always wanted to have a whistle out there on the field.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people still playing that I know, and I have some words to say to them.
I was in a position of authority.
I have some adjudication to take care of.
Yeah.
They were looking to give whistles to anybody. I was one of those guys.
Very good.
So I had the privilege of reffing the very first AUDL game, Constitution versus the Rhode Island Rampage.
And this is 2013, right?
This is 2013.
This is some time ago.
This is...
Wait, 2012?
Yeah,
2012. Because the first MLU season was 2013.
It was in East Providence, Rhode Island, the home of the townies.
Is that real?
Oh yeah, it's on the pole that they have in the end zone, the field goal pole. That's right. It's wrapped in a foam padding that says Townies right down the middle.
That's amazing.
That's quality.
Okay.
In case you didn't know what East Providence is,
I'm a huge fan of East Providence.
Now you know.
If you give me a Townies shirt, if you could find me one of those,
I'll see what I can do.
Yeah,
I'll work on it for you. So I've been reffing since then. After the the Rampage left Rhode Island because it turns out Rhode Island's not a big enough market to support an AUDL franchise. Who would have guessed?
Who would have thought?
The Whitecaps started up, and I was all in from the first year. Last year, I had the privilege of being the head ref.
Yep.
That was fun.
A bit of work, wasn't it?
Oh, my gosh. I didn't realize how
let's
much...
Let's talk about that a little bit. You were head referee for the MLU.
Yeah.
That just sounds, you know, I think to the casual observer, like, okay, you are...
What are you going
to
do?
The referee that we use your name when we're cursing referees.
Yes. I like to be the figurehead.
The figurehead, yeah. But it's not really a figurehead job.
No. I mean Ian McClellan and I, last year's the director of competition, I think is official title.
Yeah, he was in charge of the competition.
We traveled to all the different cities. We hosted ref clinics in each one, which was a fair amount of book learning, test taking, as well as in conference room discussions of what does it mean to be a ref, what's our strategy around being refs, what's our theory behind it, what's our practice. Going through lots of game film, pulling things out, particular moments and scenarios that are important for us to know so that all of our refs get to be on the same page for the most part. And that's just the preseason.
Yeah.
It's also making sure that all of our markets are recruiting enough refs, training them as best as possible.
It's a challenge. It's not like there's a giant pool of ultimate frisbee referees out there.
It's not like in soccer where like I started reffing soccer when I was 15 doing U12 games, and you keep working up and you build your repertoire of experience and you work your way up a ladder. We were building it from nothing.
Yeah.
And what does it mean to be a referee in this sport, which is a much deeper question that I have opinions on, but no answers to. And then during the season,
there are a lot of opinions on that. Yeah.
I would love to hear more, please. I don't think the internet.
Have that much time today. We'll think
I haven't seen any on the internet recently.
No one ever talks about it.
There's nothing out there. And then during the season, it's lots of game film. Lots of game film. Watching every game, looking at each play, providing constant feedback to each crew. You missed a call here. We got the procedure wrong there. You should have made the call first as opposed to running in. You should have made that call quicker. You didn't tell anybody what call you just made. That's problem some.
That's a pretty important one.
Yeah, it's good for the viewers at home.
It's gotten a lot better, I feel like that. The signaling has gotten a lot better, I think. Maybe I just know what the signals are now.
Well, maybe we're getting a more educated, or should I say experienced audience?
That could be it, too.
To know what they're looking for.
It's a couple of things, and we've also talked with individual refs and individual ref crews saying, hey, can you make this a little more demonstrative? Can you put it out in the center of the field? Can you make the timeout signals a little clearer so that, you know, from the broadcast perspective, it's easier for us to say, and Philadelphia just called a timeout,
right,
rather than saying, and we think a timeout has been called by one of the teams.
Somebody has done something.
Right.
I mean, everybody on the field knows what it is.
A lot of what the refs do, from my perspective, is communicate what the game state is, like what is happening right now, so that I can talk to viewers who either know Ultimate or don't know Ultimate and explain what's happening and sort of bring them into the initiated group, so to speak.
And it's a show, right?
Yeah.
The sports, it's an entertainment product, to put it in a really like artificial and marketing term, right? But it's a show, and the refs are part of that show in the same way that every other piece of it is. I think about like baseball umpires. Like, there's a lot of difference between calling the first strike and the third strike in terms of the demonstrative nature.
You know, they have camps for baseball umpires, and they teach you to find your own particular third strike call. It's inherent in the umpire themselves. They've got to find their out call.
So
that is just a brilliant way to think about it.
Like a stall call.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Well, one of the clips that we often show for new referees coming in.
Wait, it's not Joey Crawford running up the sideline.
It's got to be Joey Crawford.
Given the block signal.
Have you seen any refs come in and throw that pick signal the same way? I take credit for that.
It's beautiful.
Beautiful.
We should post that piece of film. I'm going to find that.
The Joey Crawford clip?
Yeah, we'll post that. We'll put that up on the interwebs.
40-yard run, just hitting his hips with his hands.
Just in case.
It's a bit much.
Well, the way I try to describe it is that a referee has three audiences, and you have to think of them. You have to think about how you communicate to each one of them clearly. And your first audience are the players around you. How do you tell them what happened? And there's two ways to do that. First, the whistle. And for the most part, the stands can't hear the whistles. People on the people watching at home can't hear the whistles.
You at least can assume that they can.
Right.
Right, they might be able to, but making that assumption is a mistake.
So the whistle is the first thing. You're telling the players things have to stop right now. And then the second thing that you have to communicate is why did things stop? And that's got to be for everyone within hearing distance. And it's verbal. The first call is almost always verbal. I am telling the players what just happened. They don't want hand signals. There's a better way to communicate with them than hand signals. I can talk. I have a voice. It works. And then the third is the audience. And that's the audience both in the stands and as well as at watching online, watching on TV, and that's the hand signals, is that we have to be communicating to them. And so when I think of that, it's the broadcast, it's Dusty in the booth, it's the folks at home, how do I communicate to them? And so it's a whistle, it's a call verbally, and then it's a call with the signal.
So in a lot of ways, it's like a conduit of information. It's like it's like a game of telephone almost. You want to make sure that it gets from point A to point B to point C. This is one of the things when we did the Boston Area Women's All-Star Game, is that a number of the players, when they made calls or the play was coming back in, they'd hold up the number of fingers for the stall, but not everyone did.
Right.
And so it's this thing of, like, we're dealing, like, they are, a lot of them were from Brute Squad, who is the 2015 national champions, so they would be the best players and best refs, or best officials, best self-officiating, ideally. But they're not really considering what it is to be an official for three different audiences. They're worried about communicating to the players and potentially to observers in those scenarios. But the idea of having that unbroken line of communication out from the game is something that I don't think that we're trained to do when we self-officiate.
And this year, I feel we've done better. And I'll speak with Boston specifically, since that's where
my home
market. That when the camera crews are up, I've spent time before each game going to talk to the camera guys. Where do you want me to be? Where do you want this information to get to you? How do we get it on camera? Once again, you brought up the men in blazers.
Yeah.
They were talking about the referee for the Portugal.
Oh.
The Portugal.
That was a great piece when they were talking about it, because what's his name?
I will not come up with his name right here, but he was a Premier League ref.
Yep.
And it's almost like he knows how long it takes for the cameras to get onto him.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants all the attention on him.
So he'll hold his call until the camera has a chance to find him and then make his call.
Then make his call.
Which I just kind of love.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful for those referees out there who really have some attention issues.
Yeah.
Have issues with attention, as in all I
as
want
in,
is attention.
I need it.
I thrive off of this.
And I think that's in the referee personality. I've always thought that there's a little bit of like that, like on stage kind of personality. But I think that's important, because again, like we said, you're performing in a way for multiple audiences in multiple directions. You got to be comfortable with doing that.
Yeah.
So, you brought up something earlier. So a lot of the head referee's job is this tape review thing too.
Yes.
You got to look at the games, you got to watch them all. So like, where do you rank having all the games in the importance level of what the league does to help referees do their job?
It's a benefit and a curse. It's a benefit because the only way for me to know, like when I was head ref, the only way I'd know what the San Francisco Crew was doing is by watching them on film. Didn't make many trips out there to watch any games. Zero trips out there to watch any games.
A total of zero.
Total of zero. We went out there to teach some, but not to actually watch the games. So the only way we're able to get consistency, or to build towards consistency, I think we still have a distance to go for consistency between cities and between crews. But the only way to get there is through film, is that we have to be able to watch each other. The curse of it is all of our failings are caught on film. And every time that we are not representing the profession of a ultimate referee well, someone is going to find it, and the internet has something to say about it, loudly.
Loudly.
I think he's including me in that internet.
Internet.
Yes.
In that broad term, internet.
But you only said it loudly, privately.
Well, that's not entirely true.
No.
You must not be a frequent reader.
It's not. It's not true at all.
I like to hang a couple refs out to dry here and there, because some of the missed calls, they make me palpably angry when I'm in the booth. And when I'm on broadcast, it's like you can say something about it a little bit, but you don't really want to just tear into somebody. But if you like, you can highlight it there, and then you can write about it a little more at length and like bring in some more thought to it, then you can be a little harsher, because you can put it in context as opposed to just being like, that ref blew the call.
Well, That referee blew the call is like constant refrain in sports.
Right, but you can't not blow the call. It's like it's you can't make all your free throws.
Nope. Yeah.
You're like, you can't, not many players can complete all of their passes during an MLU season, and those who do tend to be under 30 passes. You know, so
referees have to make a lot more calls than that.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about any form of refereeing, whether it's all the players are being referees, or there's observers being referees, or there's referees being referees. They're calls all fallible humans.
Yeah.
And they're going to make mistakes for one reason or another in every one of those circumstances. That's the consistent part of any system.
And I've always felt that we've had two primary jobs on the field. So one is that we need to make sure the game happens, it works, and it gets done. Timing gets right, that the pulls are off in time, that we're not wasting too much time, and that we're getting through the quarters. And that
Dusty's giving a big
I can see this right
here. Get the poles off on time.
We make the game move.
Yes.
And that is one of our core functions. And hopefully we are perfect. We should be perfect on making the game move and getting the timing right. We're not.
Dusty has so many pet peeves. He's like a cat lady of pet peeves. Just peeves galore.
They keep coming and showing up in the last two weeks, you call me
a blithering idiot and a cat lady of pet peeves.
Cat lady of pet peeves and a blithering idiot. Our relationship is really taking a turn down.
I'm sorry I'm sitting between this.
Well, there's somebody else sitting between us last week.
Is there a spat going on here?
It's a
little sniping here.
Just a little bit.
It's been a long season.
Yes, we've talked a lot.
During the season, we talk about ultimate all the time. When it's not during the season, we can talk about stuff like basketball.
Yeah, we'll get back to basketball.
Talk more about basketball.
Freeze them up.
And our second job is actually applying the rules.
Yeah.
And that's the one where, there's a question in what's the way to apply rules and how do you do it? And that's a whole different conversation. But in one area, I think we should be perfect. And in the other area, is very subjective.
Yeah, I mean, there's a trial and error element to this too. Trial and ale.
Trial? Hey. I'll drink to that.
There's a trial and error element to it too, where, you know, a lot of things are getting learned and tested, and it's not just the way the rule's written, but also the way it's interpreted and applied. And I think that it takes time. And, you know, you said we don't have consistency yet, because we don't. Right. You know, but we're getting closer. We don't have the right rule set yet, to be honest. We know that. It's going to take... I mean, the NFL doesn't have the right rule set yet, and they've been around for...
They keep changing the rules in ways.
They change them all the time, and sometimes in really bizarre ways. new ones come up all the time that I didn't know.
It's not just the NFL. It's every major sporting organization reviews their rules on an annual basis for the most part.
They
have proposals. They have a method of changing rules here and there. One of the things that I like about the MLU is that we have actually changed some rules in Ultimate to see how they work, as opposed to not to specifically be like, hey, USAU, what up? But there are some things that just don't get tried because it's like moving this thing that it's like it has been existing in such a similar state for a long enough time that it's harder to change. And I hope that throughout the MLU process and the AUDL as well, that we're pointing the way forward within the rule sets of Ultimate. Mm-hmm. So you can refine it down from this thing that we started with.
And in fairness, that we're built for that kind of thing. And you know,
it's the totally
different organizations. USAU, in its best sense, is a bottom-up organization, meaning that the player members are the driving force behind any policy change. Or that's the way it should be interpreted. It doesn't always work that way, but that's the idea.
And it makes the rules committees.
We are literally straight up top down. We can change anything. We can change something tomorrow. You want to change something? What do you want to change for the game?
Don't ask that question.
It's unfair. But we could do that.
Right.
You know, and that's the idea is we have an ability, but also a responsibility to be testing things and trying things and finding what kind of the best things that can be done. And then hopefully, the stuff that works, that can get adopted in more areas.
And I've had the privilege of sitting on the rules committee the past, I guess, three cycles.
I have some bones to pick with you.
You should. it's always an interesting debate and conversation when a couple of refs, a couple of players, and coaches get together and say, Let's just
I'd love to sit in that room.
Let's just well, I wish we actually got in a room as opposed
to
conference calls.
I think the room will
calls.
Help. I think we may need to make a room happen. The way our rules stuff works is we have a rules committee. They create a set of recommendations, and then that comes to the executive committee, and we make final decisions on what happens. And some stuff we're
we can shut down.
Oh my goodness.
We could go there. That's a whole pod on
its
own.
But there's a couple of them that I've literally just laughed at and crossed out.
You mean like pulling from midfield? Is that one of the...
That's my favorite.
I'll say that one didn't come from the rules committee.
That one came from us. I think it's worked out pretty well.
If you had brought that to me in a rules committee, my first reaction would have been to laugh.
Yeah, which is
and then walk back, which is kind of what my actual first reaction was during a game that I was calling.
Suddenly they
were pulling from midfield. I was like,
why are they doing this?
I think, too, that that's important, though, and that's why we're built the way we are, because there are some things that should have everybody's input and should be effective, but some things will never move that way.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to do stuff that's revolutionary or you want to do stuff that is maybe important to a different aspect of the game, that players can't necessarily see, or coaches, you know, something that has to do with the way the brand represents itself on TV or to sponsors or, you know, something like that, you need input and power lying in a place that, you know, can make that happen.
Right.
And so there's been times when we bypassed the rule committee to do something because we thought it was worth trying. The Hatfield rule is a good example of that.
So we mentioned video review, and one of the things that I'll mention in response to that is that it's not. There's one of the things that I learned communicating with you while you were head reffing, is that it's not always about the call being missed. It's about the procedure, and you mentioned that and sort of the positioning of the refs. And I think that's really important in the way that people sort of react to refs' calls. They have to understand that they're going to miss calls, but the key is, are they doing the correct thing to get the best chance of making the call correctly? And I learned that from talking to you. And I thought that was really useful generally. I wish more people sort of understood how difficult the reffing job is, because I would never, ever do that job. not ever.
Well, that's one of the interesting aspects that we get to have with the amount of film that we have available, is that just as often as we're saying that wasn't a good call, is, and that was a good call, is, were you in the right place?
Yeah.
And how did you get yourself in that place? And so if you are making the call, you may have made the worst call ever, but did you make the call well? And did you clearly communicate a bad call to everybody and get the game started after the bad call?
So you did the first part right. You keep the game moving.
You got the game moving. You did that perfectly.
That was great.
Now we can go back and talk whether that was in fact a foul.
Right.
But at least you did everything afterwards. Because once again, the game will play itself out. And our goal is to make sure that we get the game to play itself out. And we're not inhibiting that, but we are part of it.
Yeah.
So for this game coming up this weekend,
yes, game.
You guys have
the big game
assembled.
The big game? Are we talking about the big game?
We are talking about the big
one.
Game.
Yeah, I love the big game.
So you guys have assembled an all-star ref crew.
Yeah.
What's that going to be like?
Well, I will get to work for the first time with a number of people that I've only sat in classrooms with, which will be nice. We've already had discussions amongst ourselves collectively, of, okay, what are some of the differences between how our procedure may have been in one city versus a procedure in another city, and we have to get on the same page. We have to commit to, we're doing it this way.
Yeah.
And since so much of our time is actually focused on the timing of the game and to make sure the timing of the game works, that's actually a big part of our job, is to make sure that we're doing that effectively. And I think this is also the opportunity for a cross-pollination of we've been doing it this way in Vancouver. We've been doing it this way in Boston. Huh, never thought about doing it that way. That's really interesting. Let's figure out why we're doing that, and I'll have build out the experience of multiple experienced refs.
Mm-hmm.
But on the idea of how are we making calls, or what calls are we making? Let's just go that way. We should already all be on the same page. We're
that
all going
be
through the same film review. And we've all had the same feedback from the head ref this year, Steve Kreider out of DC.
Steve has done a very thorough job.
Yes.
I will note. I get a lot of emails that are very long. He's verbose.
Read them all. Read each one of those words.
He's verbose.
There are meanings inside each one.
Yeah. he locks it up. I mean, it's cool. We're flying refs in from the West Coast. I just like the... I think that one of the things that I like about it, and this is from like a wider perspective, mm-hmm. is that being able to bring refs into work together is going to make the reffing stronger on both coasts by having that kind of combined experience. It's less about the kind of quality it brings to this specific game for me,
right?
Which will be good, but more about the fact that we're now like letting people get in the same place, get on the same page, and hopefully will improve consistency as those people go back to their crews in their various cities.
And also, as I think Steve put in one of the articles that came out that was published on the MLU site yesterday, is that it's an honor to work the game, and it's something that each one of the refs, they, when the pro season comes along, refs in each city is going, do I get to work one of the games this year? I know it's a home game over in Philadelphia, or I know it's a home game in Boston, but yeah. we want to work that game
but
too.
I could get that.
I can do that.
Yeah.
So it's a point of pride to say that we've worked these games, and unfortunately I have not been able to work a championship game. Last year on the championship game, my daughter was born, so I totally missed the game.
Stupid babies.
Babies.
Get in the way of everything.
Oh, Lucy, one day you'll listen to this. You will hear me curse you. So I haven't got a chance to work. I've worked a number of the East Coast playoff games over the years.
Because they keep being in Boston.
Yeah, that has
happened. I don't know anything about that. I know nothing. But even in some of those games, we've been able to bring in a mixed crew between like half Boston, half New York, half Boston, half Philly, and try to bring people together to do some of that cross-pollination. But as well, each one of the crews over the course of the years has developed its own identity. And there's a family feel, or a collegial feel between each one of the crews. And I think that's important. We've had a lot of consistency with the coordinating officials in each city, and that's helped build a identity for each city.
Yeah, and I think it's so important. And you bring up that it's an honor to come do the game. I thought about that today. I was filling out the sort of press credentials that we're giving out for the game. So we have a couple newspapers coming, things like that. But on that press list is also Ulti Photos. So Ulti Photos does all of our photography. And they send two photographers to every game, and they cover the games really well. Do a beautiful job for us, right? Everybody's seen our photography. It's cool.
Wonderful.
There's that same feeling, I think, in covering the championship game, because I think there's like 8 photographers from Ulti Photos coming to this game. Like, there are going to be cameramen everywhere. You know, we're not on professional sports level where it seems like you guys are literally all taking the same shot.
It's a ring.
Yeah.
Phalanx around the...
Yeah, but still, for us, a lot of cameras out on the field. So, excited to see how that works out. Also, and speaking of cameras...
Yes.
James Kalinske, one of the refs for the game.
Mm-hmm.
Also a former head referee.
That's right.
We're strapping a GoPro to his head.
Oh, no.
What?
Ref cam.
Will it be live?
So I think I can do it as a separate live feed, but I think it would be pretty unwatchable.
I would imagine so.
You can put it right up into the broadcast booth. I'd like to see that.
Just send it up to you. What I'm excited about...
You might get a little car sick watching that.
What I'm excited about is when, if he has to ever make a controversial in or out call, and we're going to have the clearest document of evidence of exactly what he saw. I don't know if he knows that's what I'm excited about.
This is trouble.
Because he emailed me to ask me, can I wear a GoPro? I was like, I've been trying to get someone to do this forever. So, yeah. That's
talk about pioneering new things at the MLU.
Pioneering new things. RefCam.
The RefCam.
We tried RefCam one time before. It was at a DC game when you were GMing down in DC. Yeah. But we did the chest mount things, and it turns out that we are not like RoboCop. Our chest is not always pointed where our eyes are pointed. So rarely do we see any of the
anything game. Whatsoever.
Yeah. Now that you mentioned the dark days when I was a GM, that reminds me, I did actually ref a game, technically.
Really?
The first time we went up to Boston, I had to operate the clock.
That's right.
And that's right. He was conscripted as a scoreboard operator.
So when they when they were like, oh, yeah, and we have this earpiece so you can communicate to the guy down on the field, they're like, oh, he's the ref out there. I was like, oh, right. They're like, you think you'll be able to talk to him? I was like, no. I'm related to him.
No.
Like, wait, that's your...
Yeah, we can't talk during games.
That's not going to go well.
So there was, you know, he's giving hand signals about what the clock is supposed to be set at. And like, did you actually use the earpiece? I was like, no, I can tell what he's thinking from here without having to communicate to me.
There's a connection on this one.
So I was press ganged into reffing once, but it wasn't a real on-field.
Not an on-field ref, but still.
I've press ganged a number of scoreboard operators over the years.
This is the
you did that this year at Boston, in fact.
One of our games, yeah. Poor intern.
She was afraid that you were going to yell at her at halftime.
I did not yell at her.
No,
I was very...
She came, as you were walking up to talk to her, she was visibly like tightening up. She's like, is he going to yell at me? He's like, no, he's not going to yell at me. I am sure of it. She's like, how do you know? I was like, he's my brother. He's not going to yell at me.
Of all the future games, she asked if she could work the clock again.
You were very encouraging, wow. And appropriately so.
Well... You don't yell at people that are doing you a solid favor. That's not the way.
This is
that's life, not the way good things get done.
This is life lessons.
This is totally a life lesson.
I like this. I like this.
Well, so what else are we looking forward to in this game?
Yeah.
I
just want to put
outside
this
of the referee.
We are clearly committed to a long podcast here today. That's okay.
It's already happened.
Okay. It's okay when you have several roads to go down. Sorry. It's just the puns around this.
How many roads?
How many roads?
Must have.
I think that's what I just tweeted before this, right? How many roads must a man endure? But yeah, this is the next question. Like, okay, you're reffing the game.
Got that.
You know, and we know this is a cool thing. You know, a bunch of refs coming in, going to do exciting. Big game, big stage.
But
big crowd.
Our listeners are going to be watching it.
They're going to be watching.
And not me.
Not you. Not you generally. But they're going to be listening to Dusty.
While I'm watching it. They're going to be listening to me watching it.
That's
very,
right.
Very meta. We added another layer too. The stats guys put in a little. So if you watch it, if you're watching MLU Live this time, and you watch it in the player on the site, there's a little sidebar that will have a score ticker, which will give you like all of the information of what's going on in the game as it happens, and then the box score below. The score ticker there will update automatically. The box score won't because it makes Dusty angry.
That's not quite accurate. It's just...
We could go into it's
reorganizes
technical.
Itself when
it's,
it updates.
It's technical.
Is the issue. So
yeah,
I can't find what just happened.
Yeah, we can't figure out how to fix that. but it's a really cool thing. So we're adding layers of sort of meta watching to this. The Twitter stream will be going here. You can literally just surround yourself in this game, and at the core of it will be
you're almost making
Dustin
it.
Rhodes' voice.
You're almost making it better to be at home.
I was thinking the core of it was going to be the sport on the field.
Being there live is going to be amazing for this game. Franklin Field.
I'm very excited.
So Franklin Field is massive.
Really, it's really big.
And
I was trying to figure out if you were going to say massive or huge.
Going to dent that massiveness. We're going to have a lot of people at this game. I'm confident in that. But it is a 60,000 seat stadium. And so you think to yourself, it's going to feel cavernous, it's going to feel empty. But the interesting thing about the way that stadium is built is a few thousand people are so loud. That stadium is one of the loudest places I've been.
First year AUDL, not to go
back
into history.
Were you at one of those games?
It was the Eastern Conference Finals, was the Rhode Island Rampage versus the Philadelphia Spinners.
I was there.
Also at that game.
Yeah, there were, there might have been 1,500,
1,200, something around there, yeah.
Yeah, it was loud.
Yeah.
It was intimidating.
It's so loud. And that was when we first started thinking about going back to referee, and we started thinking, like, even if you were doing this as a self-officiated game, you would have problems. Because the people on the field couldn't hear the whistle,
right.
Let alone hear somebody yell pick or yell foul or whatever other thing was going on. Like, this would be actually difficult.
People would
outside of your opinion on self-officiation, which would be hard, and we only have 1,200 people here. Imagine if we had 10,000. How would you possibly do it?
Well, it brings up the question of what the USAU has done with observers in the U.S. Open and the.
I think a lot of what they've done is very smart.
Yeah.
Like it's adding that sort of game control and like making it palatable for non-ITs. I like it. And I think
allows
players
for communication
seem to like it
too.
Players seem to like it too because you know what's going on
in the game. What's happening in the game?
In the game itself.
So yeah, let's talk about the game a little bit because we know what our roles are.
Yeah.
You're refereeing on the field. You're calling the game. I'm schmoozing in the air conditioning. We all know what our roles are.
Can't wait till you get kicked out of that halfway through. It's just going to please me.
This guy can't be in here.
For half the game, I'm schmoozing in the air conditioning. For the second half, I'm sweating.
In the stands with the rest of us.
Just terribly. Yeah.
I'm told.
Enjoy the hoi polloi.
Yeah. I'm going to...
we've each got our sort of professional hats that we're going to be wearing during this game. At least yours seems semi-professional, and or I don't know. Or it depends on which kind of hat you wear, I suppose.
Oh,
a bowler.
I should get a hat. I can't get hats. My head's too big.
Fact.
Yeah. I just can't even buy a hat.
Unfortunate.
Yeah, I have like those like baseball hats that have the little clippies in the back, you know, and I wear them
enough
to play golf, and then I have to like tape them together.
I was gonna say safety pin them.
Yeah. You know how they have those like collar extenders? I need those for hats.
So we've got that part of it, but we've also all each played Ultimate at a reasonably high level.
Yeah.
And we've been around Ultimate for a while, so individual, like, what are we looking forward to in this game?
I gotta tell you this. So I haven't given that as much thought, maybe, as I should have, because...
Or possibly as it's my job to.
Yeah, and because I'm so buried in how do I get people to this game.
By the way, I came into the office today, and the amount of movement and motion and people talking about making sure they get stuff done, it's off the charts right now.
It's an unbelievable amount of stuff.
Yeah.
It's an unbelievable amount of stuff to get done. And
there's also an unbelievable amount of stuff. There's a lot of stuff out there.
There's a lot of stuff that's got to get from here to the stadium. There's a lot of people that need to get there. There's a lot of jobs. There's a lot of roles. Staff has been amazing.
Like, getting all that together is fantastic.
And then we're promoting, too. So I take part in some of the promotion. And this is relevant to your question. So I'm out, and I'm going around to businesses in our area and saying, hey, I want you guys to come out to the game. Inviting people to the game, leaving a couple tickets, just to get people who've never heard of us or don't know us out to the game. And we'll, over the course of these, you know, 4 or 5 days leading up to game, we will do that thousands of times with everybody here that's on staff. And, you know, I have plenty to do. But it's good to get out and do that, because as I got out and did it, people are asking about the game, and I start to tell them about these two teams that are going to be playing.
Yeah.
And then I start to get excited because, oh my God, these two teams are really good.
Yeah.
This is going to be a phenomenal game. And really athletic game, two clashing styles. Like, I am excited about so many elements of this game. And I got even more excited because I was doing a news segment this morning on PHL 17, and then we went over to Fox 29. So we did two news segments this morning. I got up at, by the way, if I'm a little punchy, I got up at 3:45 this morning.
That's early even by my standards.
So that I could get ready and be out, and I'd pick up stuff here and get out to the PHL 17 shoot by 5. Or 5:15. So we did all that, and I'm hanging out with Matt Esser's there, and he's talking about playing against Cody Bjorklund, and I'm like, I got all fanboyish. I'm like, that's going to be amazing. So super excited about this game from my perspective, not in any detail, but broadly, the matchups in this game are just going to be fantastic.
What about you? I mean, you're kind of familiar with the Spinners.
Yeah.
Ooh, he has to walk a cautious line here.
Sure.
I am. I will.
Sure. I don't mean like things that you're looking forward to reffing or what. I mean specifically aside from that.
I'm looking forward to Bandon then.
So I've had the pleasure of actually reffing both teams.
Right.
That's actually, I forgot about that.
When Portland came up to Boston this year, that was a barn burner, if you will.
What a game.
And I also got to do the, I guess, Spinners only loss when they came up to Boston as well. So Boston has this home field thing going on. Once again, I don't know anything about it. I know nothing. I am a witness.
You're just
solely
there.
A
You're
witness.
Just there for it. Yeah.
We are all witnesses.
one of the enjoyable parts of the work that I do is that I do watch as many, as head ref, I watched all the games this year. I've watched as many games as seems reasonable at this point. And so I've had a chance to see both teams play. And I walk a fine line because we do the film review. We think about the teams. We think about how we want to ref the teams. But I don't want to come into the game with any preconceived notions about what the players are, in fact, going to do.
Particularly specifically, it would be, I guess.
So we come into the game unbiased. That being said, it's two teams playing at a high level, and that's exciting. One of the things that I've always enjoyed about this sport in particular is that when you get to that top level, like with the USAU, seeing teams play at nationals, at the MLU, seeing teams play in the finals, there's a drive to win, and there is a sense of competition and at the same time camaraderie.
Yeah.
That it's a shared experience between the teams, and that win or lose at the end, they all got better because of it, and that we're all better players because of it. And that's something I've always appreciated about the sport, and that I'm thankful to, in fact, share as a member of the on-team field.
I was going to say, that's one of the experiences that I miss a little bit sometimes when I'm up in the booth, even if I'm in a stadium that's totally empty, I will go sit all the way at the top. Like, one of the few things that I miss is being on the field and experiencing that actual physical exertion and that sprinting around, the sort of jostling for position and all of that that goes into it. You get that totally palpable feeling of wanting to win, and you're down in the thick of it, so to speak.
And there's energy, there's excitement, and there is, yeah. And the referees feel it too. We are just as much as a part of the game, and by that not necessarily to the outcome, but as the energy that's on the field is infectious.
Yeah.
And it makes us want to raise our game. As referees, we want to be the best referees on the field, so that they can be the best players on the field. And I am excited for that atmosphere.
I mean, it's one of the things that I try to do every game that I'm allowed to do. is I try, at least for like a couple minutes, I will walk down to the sideline just to get that like on field, like, mm-hmm. craziness.
There are some excellent clips of you on the sideline.
I know why you're laughing.
I was thinking about NFL owners on sidelines.
No, if you go back and watch the HeroNet chicken wing
greatest, those are very good.
Jonathan McQueen are down on the sideline.
John didn't even see the catch because he turned
he turned the other way, and you're like pointing, your hands are going this way, you're going like this, and he's turning around going like this, covering his head. It's fantastic.
And I think it's funny, those who know me know that most of my reactions are based on what kind of highlight I'm going to get out of it. I can't
this
help
one
it.
Was like good to have the end in mind.
I'm super like media focused. I can't help it. So I saw that one, I was like, this could be something. It isn't. It is! That is the line that went through my head.
So one of the things that builds on this sort of energy is that I'm excited that... for better or worse, as unfair as it may seem to Portland, they're going to be playing in Philadelphia against the Spinners, right? Mm-hmm. So what kind of fans are going to show up? What kind of enthusiasm are we going to get pumped into the field from the stands? What sort of things are we going to hear shouted from the stands? And I've heard some things shouted at you up in Boston.
I've never heard anything shouted from the stands.
It was Portland.
Yeah.
But
I hear I have fans in Portland.
Yeah, big fans in Portland.
But just the idea that we'll get that full engagement of this is a meaningful game for both teams. The fans know it's meaningful. They're invested in it. We've been wirebockering them from before the game, and they'll be going into it after the game as well. There's the thing right down the street at City Tap House, I believe.
City Tap House, which is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And both teams are out there every time.
And this will be the first year that I'll be able to go to the after championship.
Is this the first year?
Yeah, I have not made it to any of the others. Sometimes you have me working afterwards.
Well, I try.
Sometimes I have other places to go.
That seems unlikely.
It's unbelievable. I know that anyone
will be there.
Me around.
We'll be there.
You know, it's that, and it's... The one thing I'll say about both these teams is they play aggressive defense.
Yeah.
And they go after the disc, and they want to score immediately after the turn happens. And that leads to runs. It leads to pressure on offenses throughout the game. It leads to second-string offenses being put out against first-string defenses, where you get to sort of build that momentum as a team. But both these teams have such belief. They're 9-1. 10-1 if you include the playoffs. They've only lost to Boston. This is where they belong being this year. Like both of these teams, if you ask them, are you going to win on Saturday? They're going to say, yes, it's destiny. Like, not just that we are the best team. It's building to this.
Yeah, they've both built their way to it in such mm-hmm. different paths. And if you watch, Greg, our production team, put together two great Road to the Championship videos.
Yeah. Makes me sound like I know about Frisbee.
Yeah. And,
congratulations.
Both very different paths, but both feel like they're culminating there. Both teams feel like they're hitting the point where they're supposed to win.
It's a battle.
Which is going to be fantastic. And we're going to have some fun tomorrow, too. We're going to have some stags in here. We might do some little pod specials, little podcast specials, little pod special. Podlets.
Aw. They sound so cute.
Sounds kind of gross, actually. I don't know why.
Whoa.
Podlet.
Had to go there.
But we're gonna do some little pod specials with them. It's going to be very cool. I'm going to do, because we're getting down to the end of our time here, we don't have time to analyze this game deeply. We also can't because we have a referee here who...
I don't know anything about
that. You just have to listen.
I don't think he's allowed to listen.
Wait,
I always listen to the pod.
When we leave here, I'm not allowed to talk to him about the game.
No, you're not allowed to say anything to him.
This is going
to
be a
quiet car ride.
I don't want you influencing him.
I don't want to influence him. Other than for him to be the great ref that he is.
He wants to
mine my brain.
That's actually what it is about. But a couple little detail things. One I wanted to bring up is the broadcast thing, which is particularly for Dusty. We just announced it finally, but we expanded our deal with Comcast for this. And so we've done this deal with Comcast in Philly in the Mid-Atlantic where we rebroadcast some of our games. We've also done a couple in the Pacific Northwest over the last 3 years. But this championship game is going to get rebroadcast anywhere from a week to several weeks after the game. In Philly, DC, Boston, San Francisco Bay Area, the whole Bay Area, the Northwest, which is Portland and Seattle, and oddly enough, in Chicago. So Comcast,
big frisbee market.
It is a big frisbee market. So Comcast RSNs are picking it up in all those markets. It's going to something like 28 million homes. We're not expecting all of them to watch it, but even a percentage of that would be really, really swell. So
I'm going to the Heartland, baby.
We're really excited about that. We're really grateful to Comcast for giving us this opportunity. You know, we've worked with them for 3 years, and the you know, Comcast here locally has really embraced what we're doing. We've been pulling ratings here for the last year and a half, and they said, yeah, you guys are ready. And so we're adding a couple cameras in the end zone for this game.
I'm excited about this,
too. So we have two end zone cameras.
That's nice.
We had one end zone camera for the East Coast Championship game. That got us some really sweet shots.
Yeah.
So we're going to have a total of 5 cameras. You know, Greg is going to be able pulling all that into replay and roll-ins, and that has improved so much this year. We've been getting those, like, cool replay packages.
It's wild. Sometimes he is reacting to the words that I'm about to say. I haven't even said
them yet.
And the replay is coming up in front of me. I'm like, ooh.
You should get worried when Greg, when Greg Fallon starts anticipating you. That's something to be concerned about.
In my brain.
That's a synergistic word. Okay. Production crew.
So Matt Gray's done a great job of putting together this package and a great job of working with Comcast. So we have this like big reach in front of us. And that's something that we think we're going to be able to turn over in 2017 into a much more full distribution of our content to the cities and to people that may not have seen us before. Because TV is a great path to people that don't know us. And if you don't believe me, just search Ultimate on Twitter after these games air. And you will see both nice things and just horrible things said about
us. And confused people.
And super confused.
There are people who are just
I literally watching Frisbee on TV?
What
and then
happened?
So there are a couple people who will be like, am I literally watching Frisbee on TV? And then like 5 minutes later, yes. And I don't think I'm going to stop. That's the moment that you're looking for. It's like, oh.
Yeah.
We're putting on a thing here that people will actually sit down and watch.
And we've proven that in Philly. We built an audience here. You know, we pull a consistent rating, which when we first talked to Comcast, they said, if you pull any kind of rating ever, we would be really surprised. And so now we got a consistent thing, and it's been great. And thanks to them for trusting us. So shout out to Comcast. But other than that, we have a huge game in 2 days.
Yeah.
And so if you still haven't gotten your tickets to the game, and you can,
there's 60,000 tickets available.
There's a few
available.
Left. 56,000, 57,000, something like that. There's a few remaining. One side of the stadium is getting some construction done, so we're actually down probably to like 30,000 seats. So get in now.
No problem.
But VIP tickets running short. But you go to MLUTix.com. You can get tickets to the game. You can of course get me at Nick Darling, N-I-C Darling, at DustTweeter, D-U-S-T-W-E-E-T-R.
At J-Rhodes 97.
J-Rhodes 97. That's an R-H-O-D-E-S.
That's correct.
97. You can get us all on Twitter with any questions. If you have ref questions there.
I've gotten some over the year.
Oh, I would
years.
Imagine you have.
Years.
All of them very positive, I'm sure.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. And then, of course, you can get all of us everywhere at Cleats Cufflinks. We are, hopefully, as I said, going to be back tomorrow, maybe with some more little tiny podcasts that we can post up really quick with some of the stags who are flying in the morning. And then big game Saturday. If you're not in Philly, Watch MLU Live. MLULive.com.
Be surrounded by the information and
build
the stats.
Build the wall of information around you. Stats, video, replay, Twitter.
Somewhere.
Dusty Rhodes. that's all we have for today. Anything to add, gentlemen? Yeah. I think
You forgot a jersey.
Oh, quick. Oh, see. This is why you stick around for after the credits.
This is right. This is extra time.
This is the post-credits, extra time. We forgot to talk about Dusty's shirt today, which is an excellent one.
This is an extra sweet shirt. This is the Emmaus Ultimate Frisbee Team, established 2000. I had nothing to do with any of that, except for the fact that I know the guy who founded it. Mm. He's sitting here to my right.
Hey, that's me.
So 2000. For once, I don't have to talk too much about this. Why don't you tell me a little bit about it?
Well, yeah, as you can see, this was in the days before... Frisbee moved past cotton shirts.
Yeah,
you're so like that's
cotton shirt. It's a ringer.
There, right?
That's actually got the ringers on the.
It's got the ringers on both sides.
Ringers. It's a ringer. So this is for those listening. Yeah. We got a ringer T-shirt here.
Green rings.
It's
green
actually rings. Portland Stags colors, more or less.
It very is much Portland so. Stags colors.
So this was my high school frisbee team. I was a. This must have been my sophomore junior year of high school. I can't quite remember in there, and I was fed up with playing soccer. So I started a frisbee
this
team.
This was your switch.
This was my switch. All right. And Dusty kept dragging me out to Lehigh University to play during the summer. We're playing pickup. Josh Mullen,
still playing. Ring of Fire.
That's right. And we would go out there and play. And I said, you know what? I think I want to make a team. And so it doubled down as my replacement for soccer. And also my senior graduation project was creating a frisbee team.
Building a frisbee team as a graduation project.
That was our capstone project, is what they call it. And our first tournament ever, Edgley.
Edgley Field.
It all comes full circle.
It truly does.
We circled around. Shout out to PATA.
Thank you, PATA. You started my ultimate career more than 16 seasons ago.
All right. Well, get your Emmaus Ultimate shirt.
I think there are 4 or 5 of them still in existence.
I'll have to go mine my high school friends at my next reunion.
And, you know, tune in for the championship game.
We'll
awesome
see
having you here, Jamie.
Thank you.
Good luck on the field, because that is going to be a thing.
And it'll be hot.
And it's going to be quite warm.
I look forward to seeing everyone at the City Tap House afterwards.
Yeah, the fans will have a little shade. You will not.
Nope.
They'll be throwing the shade at him.
They're going to be...
Ooh!
And on that
well
note,
played.
Folks, thanks for joining us on Cleats and Cufflinks. We'll catch you here with maybe some podlets. If not, next week. See you then.